Welcome everyone to a new episode of The Tap. I'm your host, author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin DeFrancisco. What do we got on tap for today, Andrew?
Our least favorite day, SmackDown and Raw.
Yeah, shockingly, a couple interesting things happened, but it had nothing to do really with WWE's booking.
All right, so we're going to go straight into it. And I'm not even going to go and do rundowns anymore because, frankly, these rundowns are becoming like way too repetitive of the same things that they're doing.
I like the way we did the show yesterday as well. I feel like it was a great flow. Us just, you know, talking about just going quickly into every subject. And
we can just do that.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk as we go. And if we don't like something, we'll still tell you who won, but then we'll just go on to the next.
Yeah. For SmackDown side of things, they kicked off with Becky Lynch, and they're really trying to push this whole, like, they're trying to push her as a heel.
People were still cheering her.
Yeah. It was still like 100%. Like, everyone's cheering for Becky, and she's like laying it on
I don't like you.
I did what I had to do and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, and I'm still the man. And, you know, if you thought I was dangerous before, now I'm deadly, all this kind of stuff. And the fans are like eating it up. And I'm like, how is she supposed to be a heel right now? Like, everyone's loving her.
You can't have somebody who is like arguably your top baby face leave for over a year where people miss them and then have them come back as a heel. You can't do that. No. Like even Seth Rollins, when he originally left for like a year and he was a heel, people still wanted him to be a baby face when he came back because they hadn't seen him in a while. Like, you can't bring people back like that who are like basically career baby faces and just turn them heel, especially after they've been out after injury.
You know, and I mean, she wasn't even out on injury. She just,
I mean, I know it was for the baby, but I mean, I'm just used to saying that, but yeah,
I know. But again, this then brings out Bianca Belair, who wants her rematch, and she wants it that night. This brings out Zelina Vega, brings out Carmella. It brings out, Liv Morgan, which
I got deja vu.
Their division sucks.
But dude, not even just with how it is now. I feel like since like, I don't know, 2014, it's always like, hey, let's take all these women are great, women empowerment, but let's like take all these women and put them in a 4 or 5-way match. And that's the storyline. Women to come out and say, hey, I want the belt. No, I want the belt. Why do you get the belt? Like, it actually is a piece of, you know, clothing. You know how Vince McMahon likes to say it's not a belt, it's a championship. Well, literally those women treat it like it's a belt. Okay, they treat it like it's a belt, like it's an accessory. Not that
That's what Vince basically talks it up to be. It's an accessory. That's what Vince actually like wants the belts and the titles.
It's literally something that holds up those girls' pants, is what I'm trying to say. Is like, it doesn't matter.
It's
literally
not even
someone asks for a title shot and they get it. At least in the Raw women's division, it's like, hey, I don't like you, and then you either
they have legitimate gripes
or whatever.
And, they have legitimate like causes to go for the title.
The one thing I could say with the Raw women's division is at least they try. They try to do something.
Well, because here's the thing when it comes to the SmackDown side of it is. And exactly what I was saying. Vince views it as an accessory. And it's not just the SmackDown women's title. He views all the titles basically as an accessory. But for SmackDown side of things, it's like, here's your excuse of why you should be on the TV is because you're going after the title. That's the only excuse that they have for anyone on SmackDown really being on TV. Because otherwise, there's no storyline behind it. There's none.
Yeah.
When you really look at things right now, look at the tag team titles, look at the universal title, and then when it comes to your women's title, right?
Yep.
Not even including your Intercontinental title, because that has no storyline. I'm sorry, there's no storyline. Right. But those three titles, that pretty much brings up the bulk of your promos and the bulk of your matches for every SmackDown.
Yep.
Other than that, you have match. If you do have a match on the card, like I will go ahead and put it, Nakamura and Rick Boogs versus the Dirty Dogs, right? Sami Zayn versus Dominic Mysterio.
They always have that obligatory random tag match on SmackDown. Right. I've noticed that in the middle of the show.
Cesaro and Chad Gable.
Yeah.
Those are the other three matches that were on SmackDown this week.
I thought you were going to say those are the only three options that are ever the other matches on the card ever, because that is what it is.
But the thing is that there's zero storyline behind them.
Oh, yeah.
They're there just to fill the time, but there's no storyline.
Because they're there because they don't have anything else to put there.
Right. But the thing is that they do have things that they could put there.
If they actually devoted
some time, you know, effort, actually and energy.
Their job.
Right.
Because sometimes when people have a job, they get paid to do that job. Sorry, quoting SpongeBob here. But that's
my point, though. Yeah,
we've been learning since we were kids. You guys need to get on the bandwagon. You got to do your job. Doesn't matter. Come up with storylines for these people. Otherwise, why do you even have them there?
That's pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah.
You can't.
First rule of business for somebody who's so keen on business, like Vince McMahon, first rule of business, don't pay for something that you're not going to use. Maybe not the first rule, but it's one of the first couple rules. Do not, if you're not going to use something, don't invest in it. Like it doesn't make any sense for them to pay all these people.
It does in certain instances. For Vince, it also becomes, let's go ahead and pay for something that we're not going to use, but then it prevents.
No one else can have it. Exactly. Yes. I understand that. Also, you know, there's a lot of useless jobs and there's a lot of like backstage stuff that's a real problem there. They're structurally way too big for all of their decisions to go through one man at the top. Mm-hmm. It's way too big of a company now for them to be able to do that. Like, and it's ridiculous that they still try.
Yeah. All right, moving on. So Bianca Belair basically ends up winning a fatal four-way elimination match and becomes the new number one contender for the SmackDown Women's title.
But Liv Morgan, I just wanted to say, was super over. She got the hugest crowd pop of the night, I want to say. I don't know why, because she hasn't done anything. And like you were telling me yesterday, it's probably because she hasn't done anything and people like her and they just want to see her do something.
They like her personality.
Yeah.
They like her to begin with. And they're like, well,
and she's honestly, we've watched her like grow up on the main roster. She's improved in the ring. Like she was not like great in the ring when she started, and she constantly improves and adds new moves and stuff like that. Like she obviously tries to make
characters. She trains with like Natty and all them.
Yeah,
and stuff
she tries
like that,
to. So. She tries to, you know, make herself better, and it it shows to the fans, you know, and that's why they like her.
Well, that and again, it goes back to the whole thing with for when they were doing Money in the Bank. Also, was they put Liv on TV, but they give the spot to Carmella. She wrestles Carmella. True. She wins over Carmella. They're still not giving it to Liv. Then you give Zelina Vega a spot on the Money in the Bank. Liv beats Zelina Vega. Liv's still not added to the match. Like, you know what I mean? So it's, I get what they're trying to do.
I like that
it's building with that with Liv, but at the same time, it gets to a point where I'm like, eh.
I do like that at least, like, because if she was eliminated first, I would have lost all hope. I do like that she was the final two.
But the thing is, they have to build it.
I know, but that gave me a little bit of hope because this, with that crowd pop, that makes me think they're going to try and find something to do with her next SmackDown. Because normally, yes, WWE does whatever they feel like, but to an extent, when it's that big of a reaction, they tend to try to do something. So not that it's going to be good, but it could be, but probably not. But we'll see what happens. But I think they're going to do something. I wouldn't be surprised if Liv Morgan is at least involved in whatever the major women's segment is of next week.
Let's hope.
I'm a fan. So I hope.
I can potentially be a fan. They need to build it.
Yep.
They started building it up towards Money in the Bank, and then they dropped it, and you haven't seen her on TV since. Now you're going to pick it up and try to make us all invest into it again. Build it correctly.
Yep. I agree.
All right. Next up, the Bloodline, you know, Roman Reigns, Usos, Paul Heyman. It's not even just about the celebration at this point anymore. It's like, so, I mean, we all know that Brock Lesnar returned at SummerSlam. It causes this whole now confusion with Paul Heyman, and they definitely showed it. But again, six segments devoted to Roman, Usos, and Heyman.
Three of which were just Heyman standing outside of Roman's locker room.
Yeah.
And then the worst part is, get this whole time Paul Heyman is cowering in fear for the entire show. And then basically towards the end of the show, Roman's just like, "Hey man, are you coming in?" And he's just like, "Hey buddy, you're part of the family too." And you're like, yeah, Roman's probably going to turn on him. He's probably going to like have the Usos beat him up or something. And then he's going to like, you know, Superman punch Paul Heyman or something.
That would've
been great. Yeah. That would have been really cool. But then nothing came of it.
No,
but maybe it's like what they did a couple weeks ago with the John Morrison Miz thing, where they were like, "Oh, everything's fine," and then they still split them up next week. So who knows?
It's possible, but I don't think so.
I think there's going to be a turn where
you can't do Paul Heyman as a freaking face.
No, it's not going to be. It's going to be Paul Heyman turning heel. It's going to turn Roman back babyface.
They've already reported that this feud is going.
It's not
to
a good
be,
idea.
This whole feud is going to be Brock Lesnar as babyface.
Yeah,
it's already been confirmed.
The problem with that is that Brock Lesnar can't talk, and the second that Brock Lesnar, if Brock Lesnar's the babyface. Okay, you can't just demolish Brock Lesnar. Roman is known as the dominant heel champion. You cannot, like, it just doesn't work. Like, Brock Lesnar is a beast. He cannot be, like, Brock Lesnar's a career heel, in my opinion. But, like, whatever.
He's
UFC, yes. In real life, he was a heel. Like, you know, like, he was known for, you know, talking crap about a 45-year-old man, you know, and then beating him up and taking his real world heavyweight title. Like that is not a nice man, even though he is, but I mean,
no, he's not, he's a dick.
But, it's he can be, if as long as you keep him on his farm and with his wife, he's chilling. But this is my fantasy booking, and I think this would be the way to go. I don't care if they're not going this way. They should do where, you know, nothing happens, where you think, you know, Roman's going to be the one to turn on Paul Heyman. And then Paul Heyman, during the match, turns on Roman Reigns, causing Brock Lesnar to win. And then, you know, be the little sneaky Paul Heyman in the background, looking like a chipmunk, smiling, going, ha, 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 in the background behind Brock Lesnar, going, I fooled you. You know, like, and Brock Lesnar winning the title, and then Roman Reigns, since everybody likes him now anyway, since he's become a heel, it would actually be a good time to actually try and turn him babyface. Because to be honest, I'm really getting sick of the smug, you know, seven segments a week of Roman Reigns just staring at the camera and then looking at the people around him and then staring back at the camera. I'm actually getting kind of tired of it.
I get what you're saying with it. I get why you're saying it. But yeah, it's not going to happen.
I know it's not going to happen, but it should happen. WWE, I would like the royalties if you decide to do that.
They won't. And here's the reasons why. And it definitely makes no sense to go and do that. And here's why. first off, you've spent this whole last year with Roman Reigns being your top heel. He's dominated everybody. And
so what else is there left for him to do?
Well, it wouldn't make sense for him to go babyface right now.
Why not? He's hot as everything. All the actual wrestling fans like him anyway. They cheer
because they're building up for Roman Reigns versus The Rock at WrestleMania.
That's true.
So why would you go ahead and change him to babyface to only face Rock at WrestleMania? Rock is going to be so super over at that point that it's not going to be like how it was with Rock and Hogan, where it's like half the fans are cheering Roman, half the fans are cheering Rock. It's going to end up being where Roman gets booed anyway. So you're going to spend the next 6-7 months building him up as a babyface, only to get booed out of the arena again come WrestleMania. That makes no sense.
Just ask 2016 to 19 about that, when they put him in every single main event as a babyface against a heel and he was still booed.
But that's different. That was the same thing that they did when it came to John Cena.
But I'm just saying, that's what I'm saying. And they never turned John Cena heel. What I'm trying to tell you is they don't care. They don't care. They're going to try. They think Roman Reigns is a bigger babyface than The Rock. That's what Vince McMahon thinks. But right now, doesn't matter. You're thinking logically. You're not thinking with WWE logic.
I am thinking even with WWE logic in this, because they're going to look at it as it's going to be counterproductive. Whether he wins or loses against The Rock is completely irrelevant at this point.
Fine. I agree. Just so that we can move on, though, I really do agree. But this is the only thing is I think that could happen, actually. That's part of my fantasy booking, is that I think they're going to tease that Heyman's going to turn on Roman and then he's going to, turn on Brock. I feel like
here's my prediction with it all. I think that you're going to end up breaking it into what you were kind of alluding to before. I think that they're going to try to tease things like the tension between Paul and Roman.
Yep.
And it's going to end up being where Paul Heyman is there. He's going to stick by Roman's side and Roman's just going to sit there and finally dump him.
Yeah. He's going to annihilate him after the match. When he hands him the title, he's going to annihilate him. Yeah. That's definitely what's going to happen. No, you're right. You're right. All right. Let's move on. We spent way too much time on it. What do you got next?
Okay. So no, going back into that whole situation though, at the end of SmackDown, you have this whole Bloodline promo where they're doing the celebration, and out comes Finn Balor, and Finn Balor just goes off and attacks everyone.
Yep.
And then the Street Profits come out to help make the save, because obviously Bloodline starts, ganging up on Finn Balor, and the Street Profits make the save. So obviously it looks like Street Profits are going to end up feuding with the Usos. Finn Balor is going to be the next challenger for Roman Reigns.
He's going to be the next dinner on the head of the table.
Exactly. All right, let's switch gears. Actually, before we actually go over to Monday Night Raw, there's one segment on this that you were excited over.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. We finally got to see Happy Corbin, guys. We finally get Happy Corbin. And Andrew wasn't like the biggest fan of this, but I enjoyed it because I like the idea of Baron Corbin, who's normally the most sourpuss guy in the world, like, because he's still a heel. I like it. I like that. He like goes, come on, guys. He smiles at everybody. It doesn't matter if they boo at him. He still smiles. Like, and he's like, tries to buy Big E's Money in the Bank briefcase for $100. Because, okay, so how this all happened is how they showed on, I believe, SummerSlam, it was when he was interviewed after he lost to Big E. He said he only had $36 on him.
35, yep.
Yeah. And then they just glossed right over that. And then they show on Raw that, you know, he's been hitting the jackpots. He went to Vegas and he's been hitting it big at the casinos and he couldn't lose. And it's all these things of him like getting in Ferraris and, you know, Aston Martins and Lamborghinis. And he pulled up in a Bentley to the thing, you know, and he's got like, you know, one of those like old, like retired guy, like little fedora hats on, and he's got like a nice dress shirt, and he's like, look, I bought myself a new shirt. And I even loved the like collage they did like throughout like the video package where he goes, yeah, I bought myself a new shirt, and then the next pictures he's in, he's got a shirt, and then the next pictures he's in, he's got more better clothes and more stuff. It's awesome. I actually really liked the way that they did it. I liked how, even though Big E was like, no, like you're,
I like the transition, but I was kind of hoping that they would have actually ended up making him a little bit. I would have liked them to kind of run a little bit as a baby face.
Yeah, me too. No, you know what I feel like though? I feel like even though that people were still cheering for Big E to beat him up, he was getting a semi baby face reaction. Like some people were cheering for him. A lot of people were laughing at the stuff he was doing. They thought he was funny. Like I didn't see him as a heel until Big E came out. I actually got mad that Big E interrupted him. Actually, I had heat on Big E for interrupting the segment and trying to tell me that I didn't want to listen to it.
Hey, you never know. Maybe they're gonna end up trying to force this into a double, like a swap, you know.
Big they E might, and to be honest, Corbin. it would be a fresh change of pace for Big E, because without the rest of the New Day, his pec flexing and random yelling is like nothing. Like, yeah, what is that?
It's kind of boring. But, yeah. All right. Let's get over to Monday Night Raw. I'm going to just first and foremost flat out say that opening segment I thought was just pure garbage.
Did you really?
I really
that was the best part of the show.
I hated it because it was just it was literally like one after another after another after another. Like, you're just like shoving people down everyone's throats in the very first segment. And it's just like, hold up, like seriously, like you're spending about 10 minutes on this one promo and you literally sent down 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys.
Yeah.
In this promo.
I do get it. I just thought that the content of the promos were pretty good.
The content was okay.
I like
Damian Priestside.
I agree. I didn't like that seven. Yeah, that they had to have a bunch of people come out and basically like the obligatory, like how they used to start Raw a couple of years ago.
Well, it's exactly how it was with SmackDown with the women's title.
Yeah, exactly.
But here's my point. Damian Priest actually had a good promo.
I thought McIntyre's promo was pretty good too.
McIntyre basically didn't really have a promo.
but that's why I liked it. He didn't have a Loch Ness monster story. Yeah. He basically just came out and he was like, we want to see something fresh, which because he knows that we've been talking about his character, yes, and that it's stale as hell, which is why he came out and said, we want to see something fresh. So him versus Damian Priest is kind of fresh. Yes. I was fine with that, but
I would have been fine with that as a one-on-one match.
Yes,
I didn't
need
Sheamus being
part of it. I totally agree.
Sheamus coming out was before McIntyre did. I didn't like it. If you want to have a blow-off one-on-one match to get rid of like the rematch piece of this, that could have been fine. But we don't need Sheamus in this picture. Damian Priest, Drew McIntyre. I was sold on that. Don't need Sheamus in there.
Exactly.
Then you bring out MVP and Bobby Lashley. And so now you're saying Bobby Lashley wants to have two titles. First off, it shouldn't have been Bobby Lashley wants two titles. It should have been like, hey, MVP wants to go ahead and get a title too.
No, because originally it was for the United States title.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, which was his title. Yeah, damn.
So
because MVP is not supposed to be the wrestler, which is why when Riddle and Orton challenge them, like he's kind of like, because he doesn't really wrestle anymore.
Well, because he's more concerned with promoting and getting everything as a business mob.
Yeah, but although in real life he's retired, like when he came back for the Royal Rumble right before COVID started, that was supposed to be like a one-off thing. He was supposed to have that and the night after Raw, and then he was supposed to retire and become a producer. Yes, but that's what I'm saying. That's why he's a manager. But that's why he's a manager now, because it was his choice. He wanted to be done in ring.
Yeah, but even still, he still continues to wrestle. And I know it's one-off things, but even for the purpose of it, he could have.
It would have been cool with them being tag champions, though. I would have been cool with that.
Not after they just.
Not because it's RK-Bro. I'm saying if they would have won it like at a different time. RK-Bro, though, his promo, I also thought was good. I really liked the dynamic of Randy Orton, and like I get the whole structure and the opening of Raw is what you didn't like, but I enjoyed. I thought Matt Riddle was hilarious. I love they also have a promo, like another backstage promo, where he says to Randy, he's saying something about he's like, yeah, you know, he's like, you must eat a lot, you're pretty tall. Like he was just saying like some really funny stuff. He's got really good stuff, and he goes on forever and ever because those are all ad libs. He went until like they went into the next segment when he had like a promo, the backstage promo, Randy Orton. He just kept listing random things and didn't even repeat one, didn't use any like not real words like or anything until they cut the camera off of him. Like it was ridiculous. He's very good at that. And Randy, I just love Randy's subtle, like puts the mic down when he tries to talk. I love that, how he just says, no, stop. I also loved in this, Randy Orton was trying to get the crowd to hear what he was whispering, the riddle. So he still held the mic up to his mouth while he was trying to whisper. I still couldn't catch what he said, but I thought that was funny. But yeah, that's what I enjoyed about it. But I do get what you didn't like about it, because that's also what I didn't like about it either.
Yeah, no, it was too much. Yeah. And then, you wanted to set it up for the tag team match. That's understandable. And you wanted to set up a U.S. title match, triple threat match. I understand.
How about advertise it before the show?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you could have, it didn't even have to be like an advertisement.
Like AEW, it tells you what's going on the week before. They might add a couple of promos and maybe another match, but they tell you what your main event's going to be the week before.
Well, that's like, part of it. That's part of it is the main event. That shouldn't be where you have to wait until like the show begins that you're going to find out what the main event is. Because honestly, they sit there and they wind up doing this all the time. And I'm just like, I don't care. Like half the time their main events suck. I don't care.
Exactly. And it's like, why do you want to pay to go to a show that you're not even sure is going to be good?
Right. You know, and I mean, just because it's in my town, oh my God, I got to go. No, I'll give you point blank. They have their pay-per-view. The very first pay-per-view of the year for WWE is, what is it called? WWE One or something like that, or Day One. And it's in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm an hour away from Atlanta, Georgia. I have no desire, zero. Even if like the pandemic wasn't going on, I have zero desire whatsoever to drive my butt an hour away to go to this pay-per-view. Because honestly, I don't believe in the WWE product anymore.
Hey, listen, I literally live in what they call WWE territory. Like when back in the day they used to say, yeah, those boys up in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was New York. Yeah, even though they're in Connecticut now, still, hey, that's only a ferry ride away. I'm an hour away from their headquarters.
Because it was the garden.
Because of the garden. Yeah. No, I know. I'm just saying, but I'm saying I'm still also only a little over an hour away from their headquarters. So, and I still won't go to a show. I haven't been to a show for WWE since I think 2007. I know
you want to say it was like 2000, but not really. The last show that I went to was probably 2013.
Yeah, which is still, that's 8 years ago. Like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if pandemic aside, like if that wasn't around right now, if AEW came to town,
yeah,
I'd be there.
Oh, they're coming because I actually saw a show. Yeah, they are coming.
But obviously, and I'm not going to get into like the whole debates of everything, but pandemic, I'm not risking anything when it comes to that kind of stuff.
I get it, though. I'm risking it for the biscuit. I got great seats.
Yeah. But I mean, make this like a year from now and pandemic being aside, like if that's done, I'd be there for AEW.
Oh, yeah.
I'd almost be there for NWA or for Impact. ROH, most likely. WWE, no.
I'd go to an ROH show, especially because they're like dirt cheap too. Like you get like front row seats for like $30.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to another piece that really just annoyed me when it came to this. Goldberg.
Yeah.
So first
off, his stupid glasses from 2002.
Well, here's the thing that annoyed me. So they did a recap of Lashley attacking Goldberg's son.
Yep.
Then they go to commercial. They come back from commercial and do another recap, like replay, of Bobby Lashley versus Goldberg. And then you cut to a promo, like a pre-taped promo of Goldberg, saying that he doesn't care about the title anymore. He's just coming for Bobby Lashley's soul.
Yeah. What are you, the dead man?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, dude. And then he's like, I'm going to rip it out through your chest. First off, you can't rip a soul out of anybody's chest. Mm. That's number one. But number two is just like, it's a garbage promo. You're giving way too much time. There was no need for two different recaps on the right before break and then right after break.
And like, stop, dude. It's not 2001 anymore with those like yellow Hulk Hogan sunglasses. His weren't yellow, but I'm just saying there's a famous picture of Goldberg wearing weird like glasses like that. And because I don't know why he thinks that looks good, but he does. And I was just thinking during this promo, like, especially because he was talking about his kid, I was like, this feels like one of my friend's dads are yelling at me because like we like messed up like one of their planks on their fence in the yard. Like that's what it felt like. I felt like I was just watching one of my friend's dads cut a promo on me.
Pretty much. I'm not even going to give it that much more time on it. That it's supposed to be for their Saudi Arabia show that they're going to be doing, Goldberg versus Lashley. Yeah. Non-title. Not supposed to be for the title.
Yeah, guys. So there's not a match happening that doesn't exist. I don't count those Saudi Arabia shows because they're not
nothing's really big pay-per-views. There's nothing that's really ever going to happen
there. You know who decides who wins all those matches? Some Saudi prince that hasn't watched wrestling since 1998. Okay, so I really don't care to see a bunch of 50-something year olds squash my favorite wrestlers. No. So I don't really care. Saudi Arabia shows are stupid. Yeah, WWE makes the money. I wish they were non-televised in America. Just go to Saudi Arabia and do them and let us never hear about them.
Although from what I'm supposed to be hearing is that they're doing the finals of the King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring tournaments there too.
What do you mean? Shinsuke Nakamura is just the one true king of WWE.
Yeah, I know, but supposedly they're going to be doing a whole King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring tournament coming up soon.
Well, obviously Charlotte has to win that.
If she doesn't, I'd be really like, I'd be just like, seriously.
She has the gimmick. Like, she's had it forever. She already is the queen of WWE. Like,
it makes no sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to do it.
It would make sense if it was like, maybe if she was still the champion and somebody else won. And then it was like,
the challenge is the champion.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, you know, title for title.
But come on, that would actually go ahead and make WWE do something intelligent.
Yeah, no, that would be great though, because she could become the legitimate queen and be the champion, because whoever wins Queen of the Ring puts that title on the line of Queen of the Ring versus her championship, and then winner takes all. That would be great. I would love that.
That would be, but again, that would actually mean WWE would do something intelligent.
Yeah.
Anyway, fine. Before we actually get into the next piece with Charlotte, I just wanted to go and make one comment. And I don't even care about this whole segment, but it was Doudrop versus Eva Marie. And the only reason why I'm even going to mention it was because as Eva Marie is coming out to the ring, Corey Graves sits there on commentary and goes,
this is the best.
And he goes, he wound up saying something and he goes, if out of everybody in this arena, I'm the only one who would actually have a shot with Eva Marie.
So shut up, Byron.
So shut up, Byron.
He goes, the exact quote, because I thought it was hilarious, was like, Byron Saxton's like, because we know, like, Corey's gonna, be gawking over Eva or whatever. And then Corey goes, he goes, yeah, well, I'm actually the only one in this arena that might actually have a shot with Eva Marie. So shut up, Saxton.
I gotta say, honestly, I mean, I'm not like trying to like put people on blast or whatnot, but like, I hate when they do commentary like that. Not just because like, hey, it's kind of putting like the women out on like the sexual pedestal type of thing, but like, not for nothing, but Corey Graves has been dating Carmella for how long?
Yes, but it was before he was dating Carmella, he had been saying Alexa Bliss is a goddess, and he had been oogling over Eva Marie as well.
But when it's completely...
And Mandy Rose.
But when it's completely well-known...
That's his character.
I understand that. But when it's completely widely known that you're dating Carmella... And it's just like, to me, like as a character perspective, I'm like, come on, man. Like, just
you could
sit there and be like, you know what? Be like, I already got like, I'm already dating the hot,
the WWE that doesn't exist. WWE,
but they've made
acknowledge
they've
that
made,
they're
no, they have acknowledged that before on TV. They have acknowledged Carmella and Corey.
No, it was an accidental thing. No, it was an accidental thing. Where it was either Michael Cole or this was back when Renee Young was still commentating. It was either Michael Cole or Renee Young said to Michael Cole says, yeah, you know all about that, don't you, Corey? And then he got angry about it and said, guys, can we please just continue on with the match? Like, they glossed right over
it. Yeah, but there was a couple of times where it was mentioned on SmackDown, even post Renee Young.
Yeah.
So they've mentioned it several times, like in the past.
But though, when it first happened, they tried to make it. They actually didn't mention it. They tried to make it go away because if you remember at Elimination Chamber, during the women's tag team match, when Carmella got in the ring, they kept chanting, "Corey Graves, Corey Graves" through the whole match. It's where it was so bad that Carmella started crying in the match and she had to be eliminated early from the match.
I don't remember that, but okay.
Yeah, but that it happened. Look it up. Because I watched that pay-per-view.
I don't recall, but
all right. But so anyway, no, because I know it's something that they were trying to keep hitting because it was a big problem about Corey Graves' ex-wife attacking Carmella on social media.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but that's when they first started dating, and that's why I'm saying they do not mention it on WWE TV.
No, but they've mentioned it after that too.
It was accidental if they did. It was nothing in storyline. There was never a storyline.
No, there was never a storyline for it.
Never
mentioned
it.
It was through commentary.
Because he just commentated on one of her matches on SmackDown this week because Pat McAfee was out, and he said nothing special about her whatsoever.
They don't usually go into it, but my point is that they've made it known multiple times, even after the whole thing with Carmella and the ex like wife or ex-girlfriend, whatever the heck she was. I'm saying that they've made the point where people know, and it's just like at this point it's the same thing when it came to like Rusev and Lana.
Yeah,
like they had that storyline going. They had to drop that storyline because of Rusev and Lana's engagement, It was well known.
Here's the thing, though. Is it well known that Carmella and Corey Graves are doing okay?
Yeah.
Okay, because I don't follow social media, and WWE really likes Corey Graves and likes Carmella as well, so I don't know why they have them on separate brands and why there's mention.
Well, I mean, hell,
they Naomi try to keep them together. No, but they try to usually keep them together.
They usually try, but look, Naomi has been on Raw for like the last year, and her husband's been on SmackDown.
The Usos were also on Raw. They just jumped to when Jimmy was injured, Jay just jumped to SmackDown with Roman.
Jimmy's been back now for a while.
All I'm saying, yeah, I know, but they just do whatever they want. It really,
we already
matter.
Know that.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, how hard is it to just throw Carmella on Raw or put Graves on the SmackDown commentary team with Michael Cole like he used to do forever?
Because here's the thing, is that they want Corey Graves on Raw because Corey Graves, out of every single one of the commentators
is
the strongest commentator.
Yeah, that's very true. And they're trying to make Pat McAfee the other Corey Graves, sort of the other color commentator, because they don't really have another one.
Right. So, I mean, that's where it all boils down.
I get it. I'm sorry that we spent so much time on this. I just wanted.
Yeah, we definitely went into it a lot more than I wanted to.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just that, yeah. The point is that's Corey Graves' character. He's known as the sleazy Google.
And that's fine, but that's just.
And
that's...
he even tries. They brought it up a lot. The other guy in Byron kept bringing it up a lot. He said that one line, but then after that was quiet for about 5 minutes while they kept saying, yeah, right, Corey. And he was like, all right, guys, enough.
That was my whole point of it. It wasn't about like the whole thing between the two. It was the fact that for me and my opinion of it, I didn't like the fact that they continue to do that when it's widely known that he's with Carmella, just because I feel like when you're doing that, yes, I understand the character is supposed to be like some sleazy, you know.
It's the same as Lana kissing Dolph Ziggler.
Right. But again, it was a little bit different. I understand it's acting. I understand the character. I understand it more than you would care to understand when it comes to it. My thing is, it's my opinion that I do not like the way that they're making him look like.
No, I know. It makes him look like, you know, he's
it
somebody
makes him
who
look,
would cheat on his girlfriend or something, right. You know.
It makes him look skeevy.
Yeah,
makes him look,
exactly.
It makes him
in
look
real
like,
life. Right. Yeah. It paints him bad in the public eye in general. Like,
he's a very good commentator. Because he doesn't need to go ahead and rely on these
and commentators
comments.
Are supposed to be more of their real personality as well.
Right.
Commentators aren't as much of actors as the wrestlers.
And that's the point that I was trying to ultimately make.
I agree.
Is that he is so much of a better commentator that he doesn't need to rely on that anymore. And for somebody who has such a long-term girlfriend right now at this point, who's wrestling for WWE.
I'm pretty sure they might be engaged.
I don't remember if they are or not, but
whatever.
But my point of it was that he's so far beyond and above that at this point, they shouldn't be relying on these types of cheap things
to
keep them going.
Also, we're going to move on, but just real quick, I just want to send a prayer for Byron Saxton, because I feel bad because he gets ripped apart since he started commentary. Graves rips him apart and tells secret things because they've been friends since childhood basically, and or college or something like that. So he tells stories of I forget what he said a few weeks ago, where he was like, yeah, Byron, we know that you've never had any girls in your bedroom, just ask your mom. And he goes, seriously, Corey? like that was a real shoot thing. Like, he really messes with Byron bad, and I kind of feel bad for him, even though it is funny, but I just feel bad for it. But let's continue.
All right, so going back to what we were originally going to talk about, which was Charlotte Flair and Nia Jax getting into a shoot fight in the middle of their match.
This was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we both watched it, and even right before the show, we kind of like rewatched a bit of it, just to kind of see exactly what happened with this. Because, so I mean, it was a stiff match to begin with, and we all know that Nia Jax is not the cleanest person to work with when it comes to matches. She's very much the type of person who botches things.
I mean, I don't want to call her the queen of botches, but I mean,
no, you other usually reserve that right for Natty.
Yeah, yeah, no, but I'll let Natty be the princess of botches, because Nia has injured more women than God. I don't know, like just so many.
No, you're exactly right. She's injured more women than God.
Right, right. Come on, man. Seriously. God, it was pretty crazy. So, if you want, I'll explain.
Yeah,
a
go
bit.
Ahead. And you can start.
Yeah. So, it started out as like a normal match. Yeah. Obviously, as you're saying, you know, Nia tends to be a little stiff and a little botchy. Also Charlotte gets really hyped and can get really into it and get a little stiff sometimes as well. So, Nia had picked Charlotte up for a slam at some point where she like dumped her on her head and neck. And then they come back from commercial break and they're like, she like gets dropped again. And then she rolls out of the ring and backs up all the way to the commentary table. You know, like she totally stops, like she looks at Nia, like not with her normal angry, like Charlotte Flair face, but with the like, I can't believe that you just did that kind of face. And then she finally gets back in the ring. They continue. It was so weird because they continue to do like their regular spots in the match. And then they would like shoot fight and then do their spots in the match. It was pretty wild because at a point, now, Charlotte gets mad at Nia, I guess, after another botched attempt at something where she gets slammed on her neck and shoulder.
It was another Samoan drop.
Yeah, yeah. And she gets put on... what happens is Charlotte slapped Nia. Then Nia pushes her in the face, grabs her hair. They have to really get separated by the referee. Then, then Nia goes, they go back to doing their spot in the match. Nia tries to go for a Samoan drop. Charlotte no sells it and tries to be dead weight and tries to hold her like foot on the rope so Nia can't pick her up. Then when she eventually lets her pick her up for it, she scratches her in the face, pulls her nose up, all kinds of stuff. Nia's face was all red. So then Nia slams her down. Charlotte does one of her big boots and then gets on top of Nia and gives like, I think about three shots, but two that were clean, like straight to the nose. And Nia like grabs her nose to see if she's like legitimately bleeding and really looks with like a real like face, like, that like, wow, like you really just hit me, like this, it's on now, like. And even the finish of the match where Nia gives her the slam for the finish, she like let go of her in midair and let her slam also again on her neck. And during the pin, you could see Charlotte Flair saying something to the referee and shaking her head, which I don't know for sure, but I'd like to believe is I can't believe she couldn't even do the finish right, you know, like, or something to that effect, because they were legitimately scrapping. There was a point where they were grabbing each other for wrist control, you know, like,
yeah, no,
like
you could definitely tell with this whole thing that
if you
if
you watch this back, and then if you watch Nia's face after the match is over, when she's getting her hand raised, they close up on her face and she is not happy. Her face is beet red. The whole thing, I was actually really interested in it, though. It was really awesome to see. But, you know, I
wonder who's going to take the heat on this one, though.
Yeah, Probably Nia, because Charlotte is the champion and because Charlotte is Charlotte Flair. And yeah, it seems well, that no, but Charlotte will take heat. But Charlotte's one of those people that they give her heat and basically tell her, hey, go on a 2-week vacation and then come back and win the title again.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. So maybe Charlotte will take the heat just because she can. And it won't really affect her. Because she's like one of those people like Randy Orton, or like right now because of Roman Reigns, like the Usos are basically untouchable with all of the, you know, DWIs and stuff because of Roman Reigns and their storyline. You know, that's the way WWE works. If you're really over, you can get away with anything. So if they like you, you can get away with anything. Yep. So it really depends, but I hope that they work it out. Like, I know all these women aren't friends. Like, I know Alexa Bliss has had problems since NXT with a lot of the women. And every time she's in the ring with Sasha Banks, I go, I wonder how these women work together, because I know they're not legitimately friends. Like, so, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you got to work with people you don't like. Sometimes stuff happens. But, like, yeah, they really need to, Nia Jax, they really need to, like, make her do some like mandatory like training, mm-hmm. like to brush her up, like they did with the big guys like 8 months ago or so, you know, where they called them all back to the PC for extra training. Like, they should really do that with her. I mean, no offense to Nia, like you're good when you're on point, but like, you know, you're hurting too many people, you know. But yeah, that's what happened with that. Nia wins, you know, but it was pretty crazy. And then we have the tag match main event.
Yep. So that brings us over to the main event. RK-Bro getting the win over Lashley and MVP with the tag team titles on the line. Probably the best match of the night. The Sheamus McIntyre.
Yeah, I was gonna say, shockingly, even though I'm not interested in like Sheamus, the match itself, that was pretty good. Yeah, it was good. You know, obviously, even with the WWE champion on the other team, I would figure that RK-Bro was gonna win this match.
Yeah.
It was kind of obvious. Yeah, it was academic at this point.
Here was my thing with the whole situation for it. I thought it was a great match. The ending though got a little, I don't know, it kind of got a little stupid in my opinion, because you had Bobby Lashley really having this match in the bag at the very end. He tags out to MVP, Riddle's down in the ring. You have Lashley who tries to go and take out Orton outside of the ring. Orton reverses it, smashes Bobby Lashley into the ring post. You have Amos, who puts his hands on Orton right in front of the referee. Referee should have called disqualification right there. But instead,
because the referee wasn't supposed to see it.
No, the referee was right there seeing it. It wasn't an issue. It wasn't like a botch in that aspect. But Riddle comes through the ropes with his feet to kick Amos. Which breaks it up. AJ takes a swing at Orton. Orton ducks and then back. Basically, like side suplexes AJ onto the announce table.
Yeah, and his then, signature right. suplex. Yeah.
And then this causes enough of the distraction. You have Riddle who hits the high knee, and then hits the heck is that top rope move? The floating bro.
Yeah.
He hits the floating bro, gets the win over MVP. And then afterwards you have Lashley come in, starts beating up on Riddle right away. And Orton hits the RKO for them to just kind of slither out of the ring. I'm like, I don't understand why AJ and Omos were like staying at ringside to begin with for this tag team match. Like, didn't really add anything in value of commentary. Didn't even add value when it came to the end of the match. Them getting involved at the end of the match.
AJ just yells on commentary and goes, yeah, they're stupid. That's why. Ha ha.
Yeah.
They're stupid.
And I mean, not for nothing, but it's just like, even the ending, it would have been fine if it was like they caused the disqualification ending, which is what I thought was going to happen. but you didn't even cause the disqualification. So there was really no point in you guys being down there at all.
Exactly.
I mean, having Lashley, I mean, Lashley didn't even really lose the match. It was MVP who took the pinfall.
Obviously.
Yeah. It's just, it was ridiculous for the ending, but the actual match was really good.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. I mean, that's about as good as you could get when it comes to SmackDown and Raw this week. So,
yeah.
We still continue to see a decline in their ratings. And I feel like it's just going to continue to go that route.
Yep.
I feel like Raw's trying to do something better, but they're not getting it just yet. And here's my one final point that I want to make when it comes to these things that they're doing in terms of like these matches. Like something we were saying before about the main event match type of thing. Like you could easily sit there and do like a video package to sit there and say like, yeah, you know, this is what happened, what caused the main event match. Like if they wanted to do Lashley and MVP versus Riddle and, you know, Orton, you know, they could have done something where they showed a segment of that. You didn't need to have them added into the beginning of it. Yeah. Even when it comes to like certain things, like going back onto like the SmackDown side of things, like you could have done like a video package thing, hyping up Cesaro and Chad Gable and like actually making it more of a storyline. They didn't do anything like that. They haven't been. And that's the thing. They keep on shoving random video packages down our throats that have like no bearing on what's happening, or they replay something that happened earlier in the night.
Or they replay the same video package 3 weeks in a row.
Right. Or they do like a random promo that you don't even have anything happening either with that being going forward in the night, or you do the promo you're doing
at all. Either,
that's sometimes. What I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Or the promo is done earlier in the night and then it's like 5 segments later on, you finally have a match.
No, what I mean, I mean like even weeks down the line, nothing ever comes of it. Sometimes people have a promo and you're like, oh, what's going to happen with this? And then you don't see them for 3 months. It's crazy.
I don't know, but that's my opinion.
Yeah. I am inclined to agree.
All right. That's it for the show. We're going to have NXT and AEW coming up soon on Thursday this week. It'll be my birthday Ooh. Present for yeah. Hopefully they actually deliver and give me a good NXT and a good AEW show this week.
So
I have something happy to talk about then on my birthday.
Yeah, that'll be great. All right.
So for now, I'm author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin D. Francisco. And join us on the NXT AEW podcast and find out what's on tap.